Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. Achieving my long-term goals is more about creating healthy habits and less about quick fixes. And that's why I love both intermittent fasting and daily harvest. Tim Spector, a gut health expert and founder of Zoe, and Dr. B, gastroenterologist and author of Fiberfueled, recommend that you aim for at least 30 unique plant foods per week. Daily Harvest helps make it easy. One of my favorite options is the sweet potato and wild rice hash harvest bowl. With Daily Harvest, I'm getting tons of plant-based options built on organic fruits and vegetables that are easy to prep and free of weird ingredients such as fillers, seed oils, and added sugars. Create healthy habits that last with Daily Harvest. For a limited time only, go to dailyharvest.com/ifstories to get $30 off your first box plus free shipping. That's dailyharvest.com/ifstories for $30 off your first box and free shipping. dailyharvest.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than deny myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 100 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. There's just something special about that number, 100. Today, I'm here with Jody Ayers. Jody lives in Bloomington, Illinois, and she is a second grade teacher. She has been in second grade for 24 years and has taught for 27 years. And so welcome, Jody.
Hi, Jen. I'm so glad to be here.
Episode 100. Isn't that exciting? Feels like we should be doing something special.
Like the 100 day of school. Hey, we can we can count things and put them in piles of 100.
Maybe that's why 100 is so special, because Jody gets it. And probably a lot of parents have had kids that have gone through the 100th day of school and the schools all celebrate it. But it really is a big deal in an elementary school, the 100th day of school.
Well, I teach second grade, and my second graders always say they do 100. They definitely do it in the pre-K, and they do it for sure in kindergarten. But in first grade, they do the 101 day, and they watch 101 Dalmatians. And then so my second graders always say, do we do 102 day? I said, nope, we're done with that. You guys already learned how to count a long time ago. We just keep on going.
I can't remember which grade it was. Maybe the first grade team, they would always dress up like they were 100 years old. So they would, that was always fun. So everybody, and the kids would come to school like they were 100 years old, and it was just really cute.
Yeah. Well, I know in kindergarten they have to bring, they just put a bunch of stuff in a bag that they can count out in 100, and then they put it all together, and I don't know, they play all kinds of 100 games. But
here we are in the 100th episode of Intermittent Fasting Stories. That'll just have to do. So Jody, great to talk to you. And you know, I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting? And when was that?
Well, I have been intermittent fasting for just over a year now. My anniversary date of starting officially was February 4th. and this is the end of March. So we're about 13 and a half, almost 14 months in. And the long story part of it is that my daughter had read your book, had read Jason Fung's book, and was totally into this new lifestyle, probably about the mid in 2018. And so I was watching her and I was watching her lose weight. And she at that time was probably 28 years old and wanted to get in shape and lose some weight. And I was very skeptical at first. I said, oh, you're starving yourself. You can't do that. And then I was also just amazed that when we'd get together for dinner, she said, no, I opened my window today at 4 so I can eat anything I want. And I said, really? And so then I was looking at it with my glasses of speculation, like, really, you can do that? And I said, so when are you going to close your window? So I asked her a lot of these questions. And she said, maybe this is something you should try, Mom. And I said, no, I could never do that. How can I go without eating all day long? So I really did watch her for a while. And my backstory of how I always wanted to lose weight, I think that I've been in that range of always wanting to lose the extra 20 pounds. And probably my entire adult life, there are times that I would hit a goal weight, but it would always creep back up. So I was never probably in the obese category, but for the most part, I think my entire life I've been saying, oh, if I could just lose 20 pounds, I'd be happier, you know?
Right. So you've always been just slightly overweight, but not, yeah.
I remember one time, and I guess it was a doctor's terminology, but one time, and I probably was in my early 20s, and they said, well, if you could just get control of the obese problem. And I was very offended by that doctor. And I said, really? He put me in the obese category? And I really wasn't. I mean, I've never looked at the scales as far, I mean, the ranges of where the cutoff is of overweight to obese. But anyway, I've always had that image thing of, oh, I just want to be thinner. I want to lose the weight. And I always did the yo-yo dieting. I probably wasn't like you where I tried every diet in the world. I found out in the last year, I did Weight Watchers and became a lifetime member. And I pretty much kept it off. That was probably about 12 years ago. And for about 2 years, I went to meetings. I did the counting. I think they counted points back in those days. But it wasn't sustainable because, you know, the weight would creep right back up. And I probably stayed in a good weight range for my height. I'm 5'3". And at that point, I'm 50, almost 59 now. So, you know, if it was 10 or 12 years ago, I was in my late 40s, you know, felt good about myself. But even when I look at myself now, I think I have changed body size, really. Body recomposition is truly an amazing thing because I say, oh, I would never have worn this size, what I wear now, even back then when I was even 10 pounds lighter.
See, that's the part that is amazing, and people don't understand it. They're like, well, how could I be building muscle and losing fat when I'm not going to the gym, I'm not pumping iron, think about our bodies. The gym is only a recent construct, you know, going to the gym to build muscles and purposefully doing lifting barbells or, you know, using the machines. But think about babies and toddlers and kids, they grow muscle just by living their life. So the same is true for me. I mean, I don't know what I weigh right now, but the last time I weighed, I know what it said. Of course, that was like, what was that, 2017? I haven't weighed in a while. But at the time, I was fitting into clothes were loose on me that had fit me at a lower weight. And these are the exact same clothes. It's not just vanity sizing. So we really do build muscle just living our daily lives. In a way, just because of the increased human growth hormone. And people really have a hard time with that. They're like, but you can't build muscle unless you're pumping iron. Well, yeah, you can.
Yeah. And I think I just heard, I think it was on yours and Melanie's broadcast. I don't know, I was listening to a podcast recently. And people that say, oh, I haven't lost any weight on the scale. And you said something profound that how do you know you're not losing weight internally and some of that fatty liver? And it's like, wow, that's true. How do I know that? And that's where the body recomposition comes in because I say, wow, the inches are gone. And yet my scale hasn't showed a big decrease, certainly in recent months. I lost weight initially and have been mostly in maintenance, I'd say, the last 6 months.
So when did you actually start? So you were watching your daughter, and she was doing it. So when was this? When was this happening? Your daughter started in 2018?
She started in 2018, did all the research. She was the one that really read all the books and did everything. And she kept on saying, you need to read this girl. Her name is Jen Stevens. And she's actually a lady. You need to read her book. And the funny thing is, I do not read. And so for her to say, you need to read a book, I thought, oh man, that would take some effort.
Second grade teacher, don't tell your
kids. I know it.
We don't have time to read. We're busy doing other things. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll read a book. If it's a really interesting book, I really will read, but I'm not one of these, you know, there's a book on my bedside every day to read. So she said, I'll get you the book. You need to read it. And so I said, oh, okay. And I still was very, I don't think I can do that. But yet she was watching me always saying, oh, I'm going to start my low carb diet. The way that in recent years I've lost weight is just to really limit my carbs, and I would be sustainable for about a month and maybe I'd lose 10 pounds. And then I went right back to gaining it back. So she just knew that I wanted to do something, and I watched her. So for Christmas that year, this is 2018, she gave me Delay, Don't Deny. And it was one of my presents. And she said, now you can read the book, Mom. And I said, okay. And of course, I'm supposed to read it over Christmas break and maybe start on January 1st, like the rest of the world does. But I never got around to reading it. And I do remember, I think I even tried fasting like for a few days. And then I would be texting her and saying, now, what am I supposed to do? And she said, don't start anything until you read the book. And so she was very persistent that I would follow the program and read the book. And I was, you know, I would text her. I'd say, well, all I've had today is mineral water. You know, it's the lemon kind or the lime kind. And she said, nope, it doesn't work. You got to read the book. You got to
stop. Stop, Mom. Read the book.
You got to read the book. So I tease her now that she really was the one that made me get into it the right way, and that I wanted to hear what you had to say with the scientific side behind it. And those people out there that haven't read the book, you have to, because you've made it so easy to understand.
Here's a funny story. You know how they have all those summary books, like the summary of the obesity code that you can buy, or the summary of, you know, every book? There's now a summary of Delay, Don't Deny. It just popped up this week, which is, I've been waiting for it, because they do it for all books. But I'm like, you know, my original book is pretty short and easy to read. I'm not really sure we need a summary of Delay, Don't Deny. I feel like I would probably not read that, listeners.
It was so much at my level. I just went, oh, this makes so much sense. I think your very first line is, diets work and they don't work. Isn't that one of your lines in
yes.
there? Yes. Yeah. And
they all
do
work.
They all
Every
work.
Every diet works, but we don't like find long-term success with them.
Yeah, exactly. So it just made a lot of sense. And I finally got around to reading it by the end of January. And so my start date then was February 4th.
February 4th. That's right. So you're 14 months in. Yeah.
So, yep. And I would say that because I had watched her, I didn't follow the, you know, start out slowly with the 16-hour, you know, a longer window, maybe eat lunch and then eat dinner and have this afternoon window. I was full-fledged into it right from the beginning.
And you know, there's people that works really well for, and I would encourage anybody who feels like they can, if that's your style. In my new book, Fast, Feast, Repeat, which is available as of the release date of this podcast, although while we're recording it, we're still waiting for it on pre-order. But in that book, I have a 28-day fast start where you can choose how you would like to start, and there are different protocols for easing in or jumping right in, the rip off the Band-Aid approach. You know, for some people, jump right in. And if you realize, oh, that was more ambitious than my body's ready for, you can scale back. But you know your type. So I love that you jumped right in.
I did jump right in. And because I teach, I was not around food all day long. So I went to school that day with several cans of LaCroix or mineral water, you know, unflavored.
In the blue can. Yeah.
In the blue can. Yes. Drinking some right now. Anyway. And so I just would drink and I always had water at my desk anyway, but now I'm drinking water all day long. When it came to lunchtime, I just didn't eat lunch, you know, and I thought, oh, I can do this. And I would say those first, maybe the first week to 2 weeks, I needed to get acclimated. My body needed to get adjusted. And I was kind of cranky. I think I was even cranky with my class. And I'm usually very nice. Usually was very nice teacher. But that day I was, stop it, you guys. And so then, but I was famished by 4 o'clock and I didn't get home from school until maybe 4:30 or 5. And then I was ready to eat a regular meal with my family and felt good about it. And then I closed my window. I was done eating and started the day the next day in that cycle.
It really works well for teachers. Let me just pop in with that because sometimes we'll have people start and they'll be in the Facebook group and they're like, I'm a teacher. How am I going to possibly make it through the day without fueling myself? I'm like, and yeah, like you just said, Jody, the first couple weeks as your body adjusts can be difficult, but there was something so freeing about not having to drag lunch or snacks or everything to school. And then you also find it frees up your day. During your lunch break, you can do something else.
Mm-hmm. From my friend's point of view, my coworkers, they saw the pattern of me not coming to the teacher's lounge for lunch anymore. And they were like, what's wrong with you? Why are you not coming to be with us? So I feel like that was my choice because I really did get a lot done. And I still do get a lot done during that lunch break, keep working at my desk, grading papers or whatever. But it does, you have to be intentional about still making sure that you go and visit with your coworkers because teaching is kind of a solitary job. You're with your kids all day long, your class, and you don't have a lot of adult interaction consistently, you know, like you would in an office where you're with adults all day long. So I do miss the teacher time, but I just have to be, and they understand. Everybody knows I do this now. So if I just sat drinking my water, they would understand and support me in that.
Yeah. And I would make decisions based on, it was different for different school years. Like some school years, it just depended on, my classroom was on the third grade hall. And I had been a third grade teacher at that school before I was the gifted teacher. And so for a few years, my lunch time was synced up with the third grade lunch time. So I would go sit in there and while they ate and hang out with them. I enjoyed the camaraderie. But then their lunchtime got to be at a different time than mine. And some years I had a different lunchtime every day based on my gifted kids' regular lunch schedule. So that was when I just started working through lunch. The camaraderie part, I get it. Because I really, once I could no longer enjoy that lunchtime, even just sitting with them, I did feel a little lonely. Teachers, it's hard to, you put it really well. It is a little lonely because you feel like you're trapped in there.
Yeah. And you do see, I mean, if you have recess duty and, you know, that's when I would see other teachers and certainly at teacher meetings and stuff. But I felt like, yeah, I do need to make sure that I get to know even the new teachers on staff this year because I haven't been in the teacher room to talk to them, you know.
Right. So the first couple of weeks, you were a little cranky, but after that,
yep, I got adjusted pretty much right away and started to see progress, which I was very happy. My loss probably in the first, I wrote it down as, I mean, I would keep track of my weight and I wouldn't weigh myself every day, but I wanted to see the progress. So in about a 5-week period, I had lost nearly 10 pounds. And I said, oh, good.
And at that point, were you still, I know you mentioned earlier that you wanted to lose about 20 earlier in your life, but was that still where you were at this point, about 20
no,
to lose?
No, I wanted to lose about 40.
Okay.
I had gotten,
just checking.
I had gotten to the weight, and this is always the magical weight that I would get to, and even beyond it, maybe by 3 or 4 pounds. But I have 3 children, grown adults, and I always got to 164 pounds when I went into labor. That was the day, you know, it's like, oh, I reached my 9-month pregnancy weight, and every single one of them, I was the same weight.
That's so funny. I was 163 pounds with my first son. That's just, and someone just talked about that on a podcast that I just recorded last week. So that's funny, that number, but it sticks in your head. We remember those milestone weights. And when you find yourself not pregnant and you're like, ooh, I'm at my pregnancy weight.
Exactly. And I would say that. I said that to my husband. I would say, oh, man, I'm weighing exactly what I weighed 9 months pregnant. And look at me. I'm not, there's no baby, you know. And again, you know, this is 20, 25, 26 years later. My youngest is just 26 now. So, you know, there's no reason I should be weighing that. I probably would be one that people wouldn't know that I weighed that much because I wear black all the time. Just my figure type, I have a naturally small waist. So that always was to my benefit. They would say, well, maybe the belly was there, but the waistline still was there. And you learn to hide it well. You have a lot of black pants and different sizes, and the styles, the longer blousey things could hide it, you know.
Empire waist, that was my trick. I still had a smaller, kind of like a rib cage. Well, I really didn't because I weighed 210 pounds, but that was the smallest point. So I would wear things that emphasized that. Oh, yeah, lots of drapey clothes.
Yeah. So anyway, I was seeing progress in the first month of, I'd say, 10 pounds. From February to May, which would be 3 months in, I was nearly 20 pounds of lost weight. And finally, this is when people are saying, oh, you're losing weight. And I'd say, yeah, I'm doing intermittent fasting. And, you know, you get mixed reactions. But my husband was a great encourager. He totally loved it because the kind of diets that he was used to me being on was, where can we go to eat tonight? And I'd say, well, I have to get a salad or I have to get a piece of meat, you know? And so I was limited with going to pasta or pizza or because I could never eat carbs. You know, that was the only way that I was able to lose.
Did you ever just eat the toppings off the pizza?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was me. I'm just eating the toppings off the pizza this week.
Yeah.
I need 5 pieces of pizza so I can eat the toppings off. I mean,
yeah.
Crazy.
So I was encouraged. I did measurements too. I started with taking my measurements maybe about 3 weeks in, not from the very first day, but overall I was losing inches. And I do have a question about measurements because I measured everything, you know. So you say, okay, I'm going to measure my right thigh and my right calf, and then you would write the measurement down. So my theory on measuring is that I would just say, okay, I'm going to measure all these things and make a really big number and add them all together. So I'd start out with this really big number. This is my waist. This is my belly. This is my hips. And then a month later, when I would take my measurements again, I would take those individual parts and say, oh, I went down 2 inches in that. Is that the way to do it, do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's really up to you. There's no right way. You hear people, you know, they'll say, I've lost a total of 19 inches because that's adding all the parts together. So really, there's no right or wrong way. It's just a matter of tracking what you want to track and the areas you want to. But it is really exciting to add them all up and get a big number.
And I just looked at my chart today, just preparing for this, and I have lost a total of 42 and a half inches.
Love it.
Which, again, I didn't measure my big toe, but I measured, you know, big, you know. Oh, on that big toe, there's 1/19 of an inch, you know.
Right. The more areas you measure, the larger your inch loss will be. But it's just, you know, it's motivating. We don't have a standard for that, no.
Well, and even with my waist, which again, people would say, oh, you always have, you just naturally have a small waist. I lost 5 1/4 inches off my waist alone. So the waist just got smaller and I don't have the belly fat or the extra weight or the inches around it. So
measuring your waist is really an important one because if you're going to measure nothing else, there's a couple of different ratios that we can use. Like for example, waist to hip is a really good one. Like find your waist measurement, find your hip measurement, find the ratio of that. And then also waist to height ratio. And you can go online and read about these and search for them, but they can actually show you where you fall on the list of like waist to hip or waist to height ratio. So I had fun doing that. And so like in one of them, I had like the same ratio as like Beyonce or something. And on one of them, I had the same ratio as like a female college swimmer. And so that made me feel like super good about myself. So y'all calculate your waist to hip and waist to height ratio and follow those. And then go online and search for where you can compare yourself. But it's a measure of health. You want your waist measurement to go down.
Yeah. And I think that I've hit a set weight. There was a point where I pretty much didn't stop losing weight, but it slowed down significantly. And that was probably six or seven months into, you know, from February to about September. I said, oh, I've lost a total of 26 pounds now. How much longer? You know, you kind of have this set goal in your mind of, I want to weigh 128 pounds, which is what I weighed the day I got married, you know, and I'm not under 130 yet. I'm close to it, but it's taken a really long time to just lose those last 5 pounds. And
now, have you tried on your wedding dress? Do you still have your wedding dress?
Yes, I did do that. And actually, I posted, that was one of my stories on your
Facebook.
I somehow
had a feeling. So there was a photo of you in your wedding dress, right?
Uh-huh.
And is it too big or does it fit or is it big?
Oh, it fit. I mean, I probably had a smaller waist even then, but truly I was able to zip it up. And even though I might be 4 pounds heavier than that day, I was like, wow, I'm I'm wearing my wedding dress, you know, from 1987.
I got married in 1991, and I have my wedding dress. And I was a little chubby when I got married, looking back. You know, I had just graduated from college, so it was probably a lot of beer going on at that period of time. I don't know. Well, it was a year after I graduated from college, so I don't know. I was a little chubby, but my wedding dress is now huge on me. Like, I'm way smaller than I was. I was 21 when I got married, almost 22, and I'm way smaller than I was then, which is a lot of fun. So keep using that wedding dress as your guide. I love that. Old clothes. You can't get any older than that.
I have not. You know, that was a fun thing to do, but I had done that. My husband and I were married 32 years, and so I had done that periodically, you know, maybe probably in a point where I was thinner. So I'd say, let me try this on. It's our anniversary, you know, and he always thought that was a fun little thing to see that I could still fit into it, you know. But anyway, so that's how I found Delay, Don't Deny. Oh, I did end up, started intermittent fasting through your book, which my daughter made me read. And I did end up listening to, I wanted more of the science part of it. So probably in the early summer months, I listened to Jason Fung's Obesity Code. And I listened to that. And that was I loved listening to that. It was on a long road trip. And I said, oh, I'm just going to listen to this whole book on audio, and have referred a lot of people to listen to do both things, either listen to Jin's book, read it, and read Obesity Code or listen to it. That kind of got my focus around the science behind it and why it does work for me. I don't think that I was one that was insulin resistant. I think that I just, you know, needed
probably
to lose.
Not. You know, the fact that your waist was always small is a good sign. You know, you just had that stubborn weight gain that so many of us are plagued with. And I'm actually grateful that I became obese and had all the issues with my weight and was so heavy, because if I had just been a little overweight, I might have just accepted it and lived with it.
Right. I think that my self-image, now my self-image has changed, but my entire adult life, I think that I always looked, or probably teen years going into my adult life, I looked at people as the word cute to me was synonymous with skinny. I would judge people by, oh, well, let me look at their body type. Yep, they're really cute. And maybe their face was really cute. And my husband always laughed at me. He said, you really look at people with that image of saying, what is their body type like? And so it was probably a comparison to me of, oh, if I could just, I always wanted to make the perfect body. You know, I'd keep my waist. I would trade my legs for hers. And I would grow 2 more inches. And
yeah, we are our worst critics, aren't we?
Yeah, and I was always comparing that, you know, to good-looking meant that you were thin, you know, which is warped. It was totally a warped thinking.
So I totally get it. So you're right now, you want your goal weight, like you still have in mind 128. That's the number.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I'll ever get there. And you know, I'm at the point where I don't really care. I'm so thankful that I have embrace this lifestyle and saying, you know what, intermittent fasting is for me. It's not a yo-yo diet. It's what I'm doing. And I'm happy that I can keep going to buy clothes and I go down a size. I say, wow, I maybe didn't change on the scale in the last 6 months, but I went down another pant size.
Right. So. Yeah. I've told this story before. I went from a size 4 Loft brand jeans to a size 0 Loft brand jeans and only lost 2 pounds on the scale.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a big change down, but only 2 pounds on the scale. So go by those clothing sizes, definitely.
Yeah. But part of my story, and this is when I wrote you to say, maybe you want to listen to maybe consider me for your podcast. Part of my story involves my husband. And that is one thing that I can say, that intermittent fasting through a very difficult period of my life, intermittent fasting was a very stabilizing thing that I really hung on to. And that has to do with David, who is my husband for nearly 32 years. He did pass away in the spring of 2019. And so, like I said, I started intermittent fasting in February, and he was going through cancer treatment at the time. He had a blood cancer called multiple myeloma, and he was diagnosed with that in the very early stages. It was back in the summer of 2018, and they had great prognosis. They said, we'll start treating you with this drug. It's an oral chemotherapy, and you'll do great. And so he started his treatment in the fall of that year. And anyway, the intermittent fasting was not anything to do with what he was going through, although I just put it as part of my new lifestyle to lose weight like I always did, you know. And we were handling his treatment pretty well. He had done this oral chemotherapy and he was still working full time and, you know, would just take this pill. But by early January, they said they did a bone marrow biopsy again. And they said, it's not working. We want to try another approach. And so by early March, he was in a immunotherapy program where he would go in weekly and have, it's not chemotherapy, but it's called immunotherapy. And I've learned a lot through, I mean, I'm not at all a science type medical person, but when you go through these kind of things, you do your research and you say, oh, what is that? You know, it's not as hard on the body, but yet it's doing something to the immune system.
Is it supposed to like stimulate your immune system to fight off the cancer naturally? That's what it's doing. Yeah.
And there's some wonderful things that it does. And that is one of them. It does, your immune system can be compromised. So he would get sick, like with a bad cold, and then he'd be pretty weak. And it also, the main thing that had happened, and it was so sad because it was causing him to not have much of an appetite. You know, he had lost some weight and he didn't need to lose any weight. And he didn't have his taste. He would say it this way. He'd say, my taste buds just aren't right anymore. And so he would eat this food and he'd say, it tastes like cardboard. And so I'd be enjoying my one meal a day and he'd be eating a piece of cardboard.
That's got to be really awful to not be able to enjoy your food.
I know. So that was sad, but he had the greatest attitude about it. He just was upbeat and, well, this is what they're telling me to do. Okay. You know, and he just had a, and we pretty much embraced the whole thing. Everybody would say, wow, you guys have a really good attitude with this. And most of it was just waiting for the insurance company to say, okay, start this next treatment and do this. And so sometimes there'd be waiting periods of, you know, a week or two of not knowing what new therapy he was going to have. But anyway, so all of that to say, that was into the months of March. He was starting this immunotherapy. He would go in weekly to have his, sometimes would be, at first it was several hours, but it ended up being about a 4-hour procedure where they just hook you up to an IV machine and they give you all these drugs for the week. And then you'd have another one the next week. And a wonderful thing, my school was my class. The parents in my class were so supportive and helpful through this time. They set up a weekly meal thing on Monday nights. The day he would have his therapy, they would bring me a meal. And I'd say, well, I'm not the one. I know how to cook. You know, I'm not the one. And then, no, you'll be under pressure and you need to have, you know, somebody provide a meal for you. And so, and that was just a very, very kind-hearted, wonderful for the whole spring. I think we had meals coming in on Mondays. And the great thing in that, when people would say, is there any dietary restrictions? And I'd say, well, he doesn't eat very much, but I can eat whatever, you know. Bring
that
the
is
Olive
the best.
Garden.
Yeah. No dietary restrictions
yeah.
at all.
Yeah. And they would bring home cooked meals and restaurant meals. And it was just really just a great way that people really ministered to us as far as, you know, showing their kindness through the difficult time we were going through. Anyway, so that took us into Easter time, and they did another bone marrow biopsy, and they said, it's really working. This immunotherapy is doing the numbers, or whatever they were looking at, the numbers were going up and going the right way. And so we were very encouraged. And throughout this whole thing, we never had any worries about anything. We just said, well, we'll be on these drugs and hopefully your appetite will come back. And the goal with the doctor was to get him into a remission so he wouldn't have anymore. He could live with this for a long time. So all of that, everything was going fine. We had a big Easter meal in April, whenever Easter was that year. And then on April 27th of last year, he took a nosedive and he was brought to the hospital because he just collapsed in my son's arms and we called the ambulance. And anyway, what was happening was, I don't know if it was a byproduct of the immunotherapy, but sometimes it was doing the good things, but it was also affecting his hemoglobin. And so he was suffering from really, really low hemoglobin, which I learned about hemoglobin, if you know what that is. You know, the function of hemoglobin is to carry oxygen from the lungs to the body's tissues. And you just can't function well with you're very, very weak when your hemoglobin is really low. And so anyway, he was in the hospital. They gave him transfusions of blood and it would get raised. And then they had to do other tests. He was just going through a gamut of tests. But for about a 25-day period. So from the end of April to the day he died, he was in and out of the hospital, mostly in the hospital. But this is where my intermittent fasting story comes into it, because through that, I never stopped fasting. I just was like, this is what I do. You know, I was spending most of my days at the hospital. There was a few days I actually went back to teaching, when there was about a week period where they were just saying, oh, we're just buying time. We're going to make sure he has all these tests. And he was doing fine as far as the energy level was coming back, and they were going to release him to go home. And so then I did go back to teaching that week of early May.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES, promo code IFSTORIES10. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study.
Anyway,
you were saying that you never stopped fasting, and that, I mean, do you feel like it helped you get through it, the regularity of the fasting?
I really do. I think that was the fasting for me was a godsend, because it was probably the stabilizing thing that kept me. We had a good attitude anyway. I mean, I think the whole time we had a lot of people praying, we had our own faith that we really hung on to, but I did not deviate from the fasting, and I just would drink my water and sitting in the hospital room. And then sometimes people would bring me a meal. They knew I was doing this, or else I would go to the hospital cafeteria and I'd say, well, this is my one meal a day. I'm excited to eat. You know, it's 5 o'clock. And so I don't know. I did have people say, you better nourish yourself. You're going through a hard time. And maybe because I was 3 months into it already, I just said, well, this is how I live. This is the way I live my life, and I'm not going to change it. I just felt like I really leaned into it probably through adversity.
I love hearing that. And you're not the first person that has said that. You know, it makes me think of, you know, some of the other stories that have been told on this podcast or in the Facebook groups. And when we face the stressful times, I mean, I cannot imagine how hard this was for you, although your husband sounds amazing. David sounds like an amazing man, and his positivity and his great attitude, it just shines through. But with this adversity, you kept with intermittent fasting, and you let it be just kind of a calming force, you know, instead of turning to food, which so many of us also could go that way, right? We could be like, I'm so stressed out, I'm just going to turn to food because it's going to soothe me. But it really would not.
Yeah, I really think that I just really felt like it was what I do. And it was such a good, it brought a level of normalcy into my life, the regular thing that I do. Let's keep this consistent and not to change from that. Because in that 3 week period in the hospital, we had the really high days and the really low days, you know, where, well, if we don't get this under control, you know, and we never crossed the bridge and said, oh, you probably will die. I don't know. Maybe the doctors were saying that. Maybe they were saying that in their...
But they weren't saying it to you?
They weren't saying it to us. And I'm glad they weren't, because I think the medical team wants to give you hope. And so they're just doing everything that they can do to say, we need to do this. And we'll, if we get the hemoglobin under control, then we'll, there might've been other things going on that they were not, they were addressing them, but I think they put it in priority. They needed to get the hemoglobin left on top of it. So there's people that ask me this question. They say, well, when did you know he was dying? And I said, the day he died. That was the real truth, came to me that morning when I brought him home from the hospital. And he really was deteriorating as far as the energy level. He just had no energy. And we brought him home. They said, well, he can probably rehabilitate in a rehabilitation center. And I said, nope, you know what? I gave up. I was done teaching, and it was the last month of school anyway. And so they brought in a long-term sub, and I said, I'm going to take care of him until he'll get better. And oh, we had this. This is the other thing. My family, my kids and Dave and I were going on a trip to Ireland in the summer. And so we kept on saying, this was now May. And we said, okay, we're going on our trip in July. You'll be okay by then, won't you? You know, and so it was kind of this goal of he'll be fine. He'll, you know, do all the...
We're going to Ireland.
Yeah. So we had the goal of you're going to be better. And they even told him, they said, well, you, every day in the hospital is like 2 days to get your energy back. So we knew that the summer months were going to be getting his energy back. And I just figured he'd pull out of this and they'd get his hemoglobin raised and he'd go back to his regular cancer treatment and everything would be great. Anyway, I brought him home from the hospital on the 19th of May, which was a Sunday afternoon. My son and I took him about 20 minutes just to walk from the car into the doorway of our house because he was so weak. And he never complained. I just did I would say, come on, you got to eat something. You got to drink water. You got to keep your energy. He liked orange Jell-O. So that morning I gave him some orange Jell-O from the store with whipped cream on it. And the other thing he liked was strawberry milkshakes. So I'd go to this restaurant that had really good strawberry milkshakes and I'd bring him that. But otherwise he had no appetite. So the day that we had to call the ambulance on the morning of May 21st, and just there was something about that morning, I just said, this is it. I could just tell. And even the way that the ambulance guy, they were very kind and they came in and they do all the assessment, you know, what is your name? He was coherent, but they just said, Mr. Ayres, we need to bring you in. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, you better bring me in. And I said, okay. He couldn't even, he laid in our office on a futon because he couldn't even walk the stairs up to, you know, so those last days, he was not even in his own room. But all of that, there's something very calming and peaceful. I don't regret that I had the last days with him at home here.
Oh, absolutely not. That was probably a treasured time.
And I just said, this is what I'm doing. I'm here to take care of you. You're going to get better. And we had a beautiful time together. I mean, sometimes he'd doze off and sleep. And sometimes we watched reruns of some of our favorite TV shows. And it was like, okay, we're getting you better. Anyway, that day, then we called the ambulance and he went in, and both of my daughter who lives in town and my son, I have another son that lives 2 hours from here. The two that were in town, they came to the hospital with us, and it was pretty much a given that in the ER, they said he's very, very ill. And they said, do you want us to put him on life support? And I said, oh, of course, you know, we need life support. Now, this is the kind of thing that I just look back at it and I say, of all the TV shows that I've watched, what does life support mean? It means that they intubate you and you're never going to talk to this person again. I mean, he's going to be out of it. But I did not put those things together. So I was so thankful that even before they did that, we had a few minutes with them. And I said, David, they're going to put a tube down your throat and they're going to take care of you, I said. And he was coherent enough. And he said, that's good. Yeah. And he looked up at all three of us and he said, I love you so much. And I said, we love you so much. And so anyway, and then we left the room. And by this time the realization came that he is going to die. And I told my daughter on the way to even to the following the ambulance to the hospital that day, I said, this is the day Dad's going to die. And she said, Mom, don't say that. And I said, well, I just really feel like I have a peace about it. I know that's it. And I'm so glad I didn't know yesterday. I'm glad I know today. And so I really believe that's how God intended it. And maybe he knew, he might have known his last day, but David didn't tell me that he was going to die tomorrow, you know. Anyway, so it was, if you think about death, this is the beauty of it. When it's a peaceful...
You can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Time, and you know that it's just the clock is ticking. I have nothing but wonderful memories of that day. I can't say wonderful in that, oh, this is
I know what you mean,
thing,
though.
But it was
It's a terrible loss for your family, but you can still have a beautiful moment.
Yeah,
together.
It really was. And they put him in intensive care. And so some of the rules were lifted in intensive care that day. I think the nurses and the doctor knew that his levels and his body functions were just slowing down. And they even would say, well, we don't know how long this will be. We'll do everything we can, but we're seeing the trend going down, the numbers going down. And so they allowed us to have more people in the room. And it was very somber, but very peaceful. David, his profession was he was a writer and arranger. He was a musician. So he would have wanted us to be musical even in that last moment. So my daughter had this just, it was almost like we knew the timing of it. She said, you know what, I think we should just sing. And I said, good idea, we'll just sing. And there were about 7 of us in the room, family and a few close friends. And we just stood around his bed and sang an old hymn, which is called Great Is Thy Faithfulness. And right in the highest part of the song where it says, God, you have been faithful to me. That's when the monitor just went beep, 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 beep. And I said, on that last note and that high note and the way that he would have heard us singing if he could still hear us at that point, he was ushered into heaven. I would like to say that at that moment, he changed his address from earth to heaven.
Oh, what a beautiful story. And I may be tearing up on this one.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing it with us, though, Jody. I do think that his soul, I'm sure, loved that last moment of singing from the people that he loves.
Yeah, and that's how he would have wanted to do it. And even his whole life was to live his life, to be an example, to live his life for God, for the Lord. And so that's the beautiful thing about death. When you know where you're going, I'm not sad about where he is. He's in eternity with his Lord.
And so you had a peace, he had a peace, the whole family.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. So that's the great thing. We have the hope in eternity. Now, the grieving process for me is the loss of, you know, my best friend, the one that I loved. And living my life the rest of my years without him is what I've had to do and still am doing. I mean, I think the first year has been the hardest. Everybody says that, you know, I think I'm doing okay. I've tried to keep myself busy. Keeping busy with my work and
your family, having your family around you.
Yeah, my kids have been a great support, and they've really embraced it. And you know, they're dealing with the loss of their dad too. So, but they take care of me, and So all of that to say, why did intermittent fasting? It really came into my life at the right time because I needed something to stabilize me, and yet never did I think in February of that year that 4 months from now you'll be saying goodbye to your husband. And keeping up with the consistency of the fasting was just really it was the right thing. It was a stabilizer. It really was a stabilizer. And that's the key thing that I could hopefully maybe pass on to somebody that that wonders, how can I make it through a difficult time? I would say embrace it. Just say this as your lifestyle. If you see intermittent fasting as a yo-yo diet, it's never going to work for you. You know, well, I'll do it for a while and then I'll just go off because I'm going out of town and I'm just not going to, I don't know. I think the consistency. But
yeah, I totally get what you're saying, just because we tend to do that. You know, I think of all the yo-yo diets I did. I was on it, I was off it. I was on it, I was off it. And even intermittent fasting was like that for me from 2009 to 2014. And, you know, I can remember my son had appendicitis. He was in sixth grade. It was, you know, he was in the hospital for 10 days, which is really nothing. You know, it was a tiny little blip and he was fine, but he had to have a couple surgeries. But I turned to food during that time. I just ate my way through it. And, you know, you think it's making you feel better, but it wasn't.
It's called stress eating, where you you see the circumstances around you and you say, well, I'm going to get off the wagon because I can't stick to that, which is another thing when in Delay, Don't Deny, I think that the one chapter that stands out, and correct me if I'm wrong in the title, but it was one of the chapters, Saturday only comes.
Yeah, Saturday is not a special occasion because it happens every week, right?
Exactly. I embraced that statement because I thought, oh, I'm facing the weekend. Oh, I'll just not do anything on Saturday. I'll have all my meals with my family or, you know, we're out of town, so I'm going to eat. And I kept that mindset. I just said, no, Saturday still is here. Maybe I'll open my window a little earlier or have a lunchtime window. But I think the consistency is the key.
So too. And I don't know if it's just because of teachers. At your school, do you find that Friday just has like that celebratory feeling every week? Like we were allowed to wear jeans on Friday, which might sound super stupid to people that can wear whatever they want any day. Yeah, but
we do that. Ours is called First Friday. So that was the day it's the first Friday of the month. We have a special breakfast for the teachers and then we get to wear our jeans and our apparel, you know, which our sweatshirts or whatever the school logo on it. So
the whole day just felt like a celebration and it was Friday and then you're like, woo. And then it was Saturday, you know, I don't know. It was just always a very exciting, the weekends always had that special occasion feel. So having to shift that with food was a big one for me when I got out of the, hey, it's Saturday, let's party. You know, no, it happens every week.
Well, and you know how you always ask, and maybe I'll segue into this, but you always ask, what would you tell other people? What would you tell people that are starting intermittent fasting? And I think the number one thing I would say is you have to make it a lifestyle. Because I have seen people come and go. I've seen them say, I'm doing this for a while. And then they, you know, admit to me later on, oh, I kind of went off the wagon because I was, you know, I said, well, you got to be consistent. Or I'm okay all week long. I'm really good all week long. And then every weekend I go off. You know, I said, you can't do that. You got to see it as a lifestyle. And if you don't see it that way, then it isn't just another yo-yo dieting approach.
Exactly. And we really don't want it. We don't want it to be that way for people because, you know, I've started saying since I wrote Delay, Don't Deny that this is the health plan with the side effect of weight loss. But I really want to encourage people to come to intermittent fasting. Yes, hopefully you will lose the weight you want to lose and feel better in your body. But it's going to do so many more things for you than just your weight. It's really just such a healthy way to live.
Yeah. For me, the health benefits are, you know, just totally energy. That afternoon slump of, oh, I'm so tired, wanting to go to bed at 7 o'clock at night because I'm just exhausted after a day. I don't have that anymore.
I would come home from work and take a nap. Like before intermittent fasting, I would come home and I would have an afternoon nap before I could even face, you know, what I was going to feed my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I have 16 hours where I wake up about 5 in the morning. I am about a 16 hours of total energy all day long.
It's all true. Day. It's the best. It really is the best. And eating is enjoyable. It could be, you know, almost recreational. It's something that is pleasurable. But you can do that later in the day. We're delaying. We're going to do that. You're going to have that pleasure from eating. You know, look forward to it. That's what I do. I look forward to that period of time. And it has become more special than just like time to eat.
Yep. I don't think that I focus too much on the food, but starting at about 3 o'clock when I'm starting to get hungry, then I'm just like, oh, what can I have for dinner tonight? I almost get excited. Like, what can I, and I don't really cook much for myself. I pretty much do takeout or have my daughter and her husband, they will have a couple meals a week with me. And so then I'll cook a meal if the kids are coming over for dinner, but otherwise I'm not going to cook for myself. That doesn't work because I don't have the energy or really want to. So I'd say what I'm really focusing on, and I really enjoyed reading your book, Feast Without Fear, because I want to eat the better real foods and eating what my body craves. I totally don't want sugar anymore. I don't like the artificial sweeteners anymore. I can't stand Diet Coke like I used to. So I know my taste buds have changed, and I think that I just want good, nutritious food.
Yeah, it makes such a difference, you know, thinking about vegetables in an all new way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, and it's a discipline too. Sometimes when I am hungry at 5 o'clock and I say, oh, well, my window's open, I gravitate to, well, let me just eat this bag of chips, you know, which is bad. I'm more of a salty person. So I'll
me too.
I'll
I'm a salty person.
Yeah. Eat the popcorn or the chips. And then when it does come time for the meal, then I just don't eat as much because I've kind of filled up on that. So I'm trying to be disciplined in that, but I think that, you know, just exactly what you said, if I feel like that my health is improving and the way that I can measure it and see this as a lifestyle, then the long-term benefit of it is it continues to be a long-term approach.
Absolutely.
To
you know,
if,
I mean, I've seen people who haven't had the weight loss and they're like, I'm about to give up. And I'm like, well, please don't give up because this is doing so much more for you than you probably realize. So that would be my encouraging word to people. Don't give up. You know, the body is complicated. Weight loss is complicated. Intermittent fasting is not necessarily going to just be all you need to do to find the weight loss you're looking for. You may need to tweak your foods. You may need to heal your gut. But it's doing so many good things for you. I just would say don't give up.
Right. I'll never, ever change. I will do this the rest of my life. And I'm so grateful that, not that you invented it, but you certainly are giving us a platform to read your book and tell other people about it and get the word out that this
I'm
is
a
what
teacher.
You can do.
You know, you get it. You're a teacher. So that's what I am. I'll be happy to be the world's intermittent fasting teacher to teach you about it. You know, I'm not the one who did the scientific research. I'm not the one who invented it, like you said. But teachers, we teach. You know, everything we do, we teach. When I started baking homemade bread, I made a blog post about it because I want to teach people how to do what I do. So that's really, you know, that's who I am. I'm the world's teacher. And so, Jody, I've really enjoyed talking to you today. And thank you for sharing your story so bravely, because that was such a difficult thing to go through. And I'm so grateful to hear that intermittent fasting helped you in a small way, helped you go through it.
Yep. I really think that it's helped even in the grieving process. You know, every month, every holiday is a new experience because my kids don't have their dad here and I don't have my husband here. But I think that just keeping the lifestyle, I just say, well, it's really helped me in that. I think I'm a stable person, you know, as far as emotionally anyway. So I'm thankful that wasn't, you know, I didn't take a big nosedive with depression or anything. I just was like, well, this is what I do. I think that it really has definitely, keeping it a lifestyle has definitely helped in that whole grieving process as well.
Well, Jody, thank you so much. And our time is up. And I look forward to seeing more from you over time.
Okay. Thanks, Jen. It was great.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on.
Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.